to the Connect the Dots podcast. Jeffrey Klein has conversations with a diverse array of successful people, sharing their stories to educate, inspire, and entertain. Here is your host, Jeffrey.
My guest today is Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, author of the book Build for Tomorrow, a startup advisor, and host of the podcast Build for Tomorrow, yes, same name as the book, and Problem Solvers. LinkedIn named him a top voice in entrepreneurship for 2022. Prior to Entrepreneur, Jason had worked as an editor at Men's Health, Fast Company, Maxim, and Boston Magazine, and had written about business and technology for the Washington Post, Slate, New York Magazine, and others. Please welcome Jason.
Thanks for having me.
I'd like to start at the beginning. So where were you born and what did your parents do for a living?
Oh, that's really at the beginning. I was born in White Plains, New York, and then my parents very swiftly moved down to Florida. So I grew up in Florida, and my dad is a retired dentist, and my mom was a art therapist who then raised the kids and was very involved in a lot of different philanthropies, and then was a guardian ad litem, representing the needs and interests of children in very difficult custodial issues.
Wow. One of the things I'm obsessed with this story, and I know that's a topic you're pretty familiar with, was there someone when you were growing up who was really good at telling stories and kind of what made them good?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'm sure somebody was very good at telling stories, but it's not something I have a specific memory of. People always said I was good at telling stories, and
it could be you.
I did.
Who's good at telling stories growing up?
A long time.
I was.
I was. I mean, I'm good at it now. People told me that I was good at it back then, but I didn't really know what it meant to tell a story. I think I was probably too long-winded. But the earliest I can remember being aware of good storytelling was really when I was in high school. Was the first person who I would say is a storyteller who I became obsessed with was Kevin Smith, the director,
Clerks,
Mallrats, and so on. He would tell these stories primarily through dialogue. And that was such a contrast to the plot-driven, action-oriented movies that I was used to seeing as a teenager. And it blew my mind. And it got me thinking a lot about how to communicate through words, not through visuals.
Hmm. And at what point, how early did you start writing? When did you decide, oh, this might be something I want to pursue as a career, writing and editing? You know, how did that evolve?
I was writing when I was in elementary school, I was making comic strips, and then it progressed into short stories and really terrible poetry that I'm glad doesn't exist anymore. And then in high school, I started writing for my local music magazine. It was called Ink 19. And it was a print magazine. It was distributed in like music stores in Florida and Georgia. And that was really the first time that I was writing for an audience and it felt professional. I had started, you know, I was writing on the internet. I mean, I'm 42. So when I was in high school, it was between 1994 and 1998. So that was early internet days. I was writing on a members.aol.com site, if anybody remembers that. But I would say it was really writing for Ink 19, having the power to have my thoughts distributed and then to be able to go to a store and pick them up and see them and then have other people react to them made me realize that there's just an incredible power here. And I wasn't really interested in wielding the power so much as being responsible with the power, sort of Spider-Man-ish. But the power that I did really love, that I still love, is the power to for people to speak to me. Right. I mean, when you're a writer and you're in media, people will talk to you. they'll share their thoughts with you. They'll invite you into their lives and into their work and into their world. Back then, it meant that I got to interview bands that I loved. Today, it means that I just get to have fascinating conversations with people who I find very interesting. And that's a rare gift, and I never get tired of it.
It's part of the reason why I do a podcast, so I can have conversations with interesting people. So you've done in your career both a lot of writing and a lot of editing. Do you have a preference or find one easier? Or like what's your dynamic between those two? Because I think a lot of people think, I would say writing is the easy part. It's the editing that's, you know, the rewriting part. But you also edit for other people. Mm. So how does that all play into what you like to do, what you're good at doing?
When you edit other people, you become a much better writer. My writing is infinitely more polished because I edit others. It makes you more careful. I had never had an interest in editing, and frankly, to be honest, I don't have an interest in editing. But
editor in chief, like,
yeah, well, you know, but I would much rather write for the magazine than edit the magazine. I'll just be honest with you, by edit, I mean like edit an individual story. Obviously, the great joy of being an editor in chief is having the ability to have a completely fully realized vision, right, making every decision about what goes into something. That's amazing. But on a story level, actually, like picking apart a story and sending a writer a ton of notes, I could pass on that. I've done it enough. But the reason I do it is because I made a strategic decision early in my career where I looked at the mastheads of, I was a community newspaper reporter, and I was trying to figure out how to break into magazines. I was like 2002, and I'm just graduated college. I'm working at these community newspapers in Massachusetts, and I'm trying to figure out how to get into magazines. And I don't know anybody in magazines, and I don't really know how they operate. But here's a great thing about magazines is that if you flip open to the first couple pages, you usually find the masthead where you can see all the people who work there, and you can look at all their job titles. And what I realized was there are no writers on this staff. There are only editors. And that's true, because it turns out that the people who write magazines generally are either editors who write or freelance writers.
Right.
But there aren't really staff writers anymore. There used to be. Rewind 40 years, and you know, Time Magazine had an airplane full of staff writers, but they don't now. Or at least, I guess I can't speak to Time Magazine, but Entrepreneur doesn't have any staff writers. And so I thought, if I want to get into magazines, then I have to learn how to edit, and I have to be an editor, and I will always just be an editor who writes, because that is the upward mobility. And that was true. And that was a fine sacrifice to make. You know, look, I firmly believe that every great thing has a price of admission, and you have to be okay with that price of admission. And for me, having a career in magazines and being able to write for magazines, the price of admission was being an editor.
There's always a price. I like that. A price for admission, no matter what it is you end up doing. So you've been a writer, an editor of a bunch of different magazines. If you look back on your career and you think about kind of the most surprising place you may have found yourself, whether that's a certain location or talking to a certain person, so anyone that stands out? Like when you were young, you go like, I can't believe I'm talking to, or I can't believe I'm in.
Yeah. So, I mean, these days I've done it enough that it feels more commonplace, right? Even flying down to Atlanta to spend some time with The Rock on a movie set. I mean, that's a pretty cool experience, but it's not like oh my God, pinch me, right? Because I've met very successful people, and they all tend to be very nice. And it's like, you know, you sit down with them and they're just another person and you're talking to them. But if I rewind back enough, I remember the first like really mind-blowing experience for me was I was at Men's Health. It was my first national magazine job. I was 28 or 29. And I was a huge Lost fan. Lost was on at the time, the television show from ABC. And I was absolutely obsessed with Lost. And we were going to put Josh Holloway, who played Sawyer in Lost, on the cover of Men's Health. And, you know, I was a junior editor at the time, and I had written that many longer features for the magazine. I was editing a ton of short stuff, but my boss, Matt, he knew I was a huge Lost fan. We talked about it all the time. And so he said, do you want to fly out to Hawaii, which is where they filmed Lost? And so that's where Josh was. Do you want to go out and interview him for the cover story? And at the time they were filming the last season. So I, you know, I was like, boy, do I ever. And so, you know, I got on a plane with the team. You know, it was me and like the photo editor and the fashion editor. And, you know, we all go out and we don't have that much time with Josh. We have a few hours for photo shoot. And then I think I might have had an hour or something for the interview. And so Josh shows up and he looks like Sawyer, and he had done some modeling in his career. So he was really comfortable on the photo shoot. We did it on a beach. We'd rented this house on a beach, and then we basically like photographed him on the beachfront property behind the house. And that went well. And then it was finally time for the interview. And so, I go over to Josh and I say, hey, I'm Jason. I'm going to do the interview. And he says, oh, great. And so we grab some beers, some Kona beers. Kona is the Hawaiian beer. And we sit down and we're at this, table just behind this random house that Men's Health has rented. And they got the beach. And I got this guy from my favorite television show, and I've got his full attention. And we just have this very personal conversation about finding yourself and finding your path. And he was generous. He was thoughtful. And it was wonderful. And then I took a photo with him, which is one of my favorite photos, because he is this like, you know, hunky guy. And I just looked like this funny, pale, like kind of elf next to him. And then he left, and we were cleaning up, and I went back to the table that we had been sitting at, and there were a bunch of beer bottles, and Kona beer has a little, like, underneath the cap, on the underside of the cap, they have a Hawaiian, I'm sorry, I don't know the better terminology, but the kind of native Hawaiian word, and then the English translation, kind of like fortune cookies, how they'll have the Chinese word. Mm-hmm. I picked one up and I looked underneath it, and the word was Lost, and then the translation. And I just thought, this is the perfect ending to this unbelievable experience. And so I pocketed that bottle cap, and I still have it. It's in my office now that I speak to you in. And it was a portal into a space that I would have never otherwise had the opportunity. And it's worth remembering those moments, so that when they become commonplace, you don't take them for granted.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a really good perspective to have. Like, you know, never take for granted the opportunities that anything may give you. But for the opportunities of people who are trying to be writers, any advice for people who are like, oh, I like writing, or, you know, how do I get a career now? It's both easier and harder, I think.
Yeah, it's both easier and harder. I'd say that's right. I mean, we should divide it up, because there's a lot of ways to make a career in writing, right? I chose a very traditional media path in kind of journalism, but, you know, there's all sorts of other ways to do it. And there are a lot of freelancers who we work with who maybe have never even held a staff job. They're just freelancers. What's my advice? My advice is to do not worry at the very beginning about who you are writing for, and worry a lot more about gaining the opportunity to write. I am very, very grateful that I graduated college. I got a job at a community newspaper called the Gardner News, and I was there for about a year. I quit. I freelanced. I got another tiny newspaper job. This one a little bit larger, the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. And then I became a junior editor at Boston Magazine. And that's all. That's what I did before I ended up in national magazines. The next one was Men's Health. And anyway, the reason I tell you that is that, you know, the rest of my career has been in national magazines in New York City and, you know, the sort of hub of media. And I meet all of these young people who came here right out of college, and their intention was to, or is to, work for like a national brand. And some of them, I mean, I'm meeting the ones who get in. There are a lot of people who never do. And the ones who get in still have, I'll tell you what they're going to do. They're going to do really, really low level stuff for a very long time, because there are a lot of people ahead of them, and those people don't move around all that much. And that's a pretty limited set of opportunities, and you will probably get pigeonholed. So there are so many people who, it looks glamorous from the outside. They moved to New York, they're 22, they got a job at, I don't know, Cosmopolitan, and they're writing for cosmopolitan.com. But here's the problem. The problem is that they're not getting reporting experience. They're not getting long form experience. They're not really getting any kind of other experience aside from the daily grind of creating aggregated posts on cosmopolitan.com. And they're not going to, on their own, develop a wider skill set, or rather, they're not going to, through their organization, develop a wider skill set that's necessary to grow their career. So they're going to have to do that on their own. I remember being at another magazine years ago, where I was a more senior editor at that time, and a junior editor from a junior writer from the website had an idea for a feature in print, and I thought it was a really good idea, and I championed it, and ultimately we got the buy-in from the editor-in-chief, and so the story was assigned, and this young writer then flies across the country to go report it out. And she sends me a panicked text at the end of the first day of reporting. This was business reporting, so she was at a company. And sends me this panicked text. And the text is basically, I'm not getting anything from these people. Like, I'm asking them questions and I'm not getting anything. And I started to ask her what was going on. And what I eventually came to realize was, oh my God, she doesn't know how to do this, because she's never had to, right? She only has called people on the phone on the occasions in which she does call somebody on the phone and has a pretty targeted conversation about a very specific thing for like 15, 20 minutes. What she hadn't done was immerse herself into a world and sort of just build trust in a very quick and efficient way, and then get people to say kind of interesting, juicy, insightful stuff, things, so that she could build a longer narrative. She just hadn't done it because there was no opportunity to do it. And so I needed to coach her through it on the fly. Now, she ended up doing a pretty good job in that story, but I give it as a cautionary tale, because here's the other way to do it. The other way to do it is you start small. You start at a small publication. You start with a small opportunity where you can be big, or at least you can do a little bit of everything. I mean, you know, when I was working at these tiny newspapers, I was doing everything. I was covering cops and courts, and I was writing features, and I was hanging out with the mayor and whatever. I was getting a really good breadth of information. And then I went to Boston Magazine, and that was small enough that I was able to edit and write and do investigations and also do funny calendar items and a little bit of everything, so that by the time I had bigger opportunities, like at Men's Health, I had a more robust skill set to draw from. I feel very fortunate about that. I at the time, those little jobs were ego bruising. I hated working at that tiny paper, but I look back at it now and I'm so grateful that I had it.
Mm. Yeah. I think, again, having the opportunity to get the experience, like, you need experience. And if you go straight to the more known brand, you're not going to get it. So it's about, I mean, I think, you know, the term a lot of paying your dues, that's a way to pay your dues. And, you know, I think a lot of people characterize this certain people as wanting to take a shortcut, and there really aren't any. And I think that's, you know, you could be talented, but it doesn't mean you can go right away and become, you know, a seasoned anything, because you haven't had any experience.
Yeah, but you know, you do see some people who, fresh out of college, they get a job at the New York Times and they start writing giant stories. That happens. It doesn't happen often. And frankly, if it didn't happen for you, then the chances are that you just didn't win the lottery the way that that person did. And you just have to be okay with that. And I have had to make peace with that. I didn't win the lottery. I mean, look, I did in a way because I became editor-in-chief of a national brand at age 35. That was in a way winning the lottery. But, you know, I spent a lot of years definitely not winning the lottery, where I was incredibly jealous of young people working at the Times and the Post or, you know, the New Yorker or something. And here I am slaving away at the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. But you know what? The way to win the lottery is to buy yourself as many lottery tickets as possible. And you buy as many lottery tickets as possible through basically hard grinding work.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the idea that a lot of people talk about is, you know, most careers are a marathon, not a sprint. If you approach it like it's a sprint, you're going to fall down and not finish the race. But you have ascended by most people's, you know, view. So how do you define success for yourself?
Growth. Development of new opportunities. I think the foundation of your question is very important, because what you're asking there is really about, like you just said, how do you define success for yourself? The worst thing that we can do is we can operate on someone else's definition of success. We do that all the time. But I had aspired to be editor-in-chief of a magazine. But I'll tell you what, the funny thing is that back when I first dreamt that maybe it would be possible that I would be editor-in-chief of a brand, the reason why I was really interested in that was because it felt like stability. It felt like I could stay in magazines for a long time. And I could make enough money to you know, kind of like live in New York. And now that I am editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur of a national magazine, you know, the funny thing is that the thing I spend the least amount of time thinking about is how do I have a career in magazines? Because being at being in this role now exposes me to all these other really interesting opportunities. Speaking, where I make a lot of money, startup advising, consulting, writing in other forms, books, podcasts. I do all of this. And that's not to say that I'm ready to leave magazines, because this is still, it's a good ride. And it's an honor to occupy the role that I occupy. But I will tell you what, this is my last magazine job. Just is. I whenever this ends, I am not interested in another magazine job. I'm going to do other things based on all these other opportunities that this created for me. Mm-hmm. And what that goes to show me, and what I always want to be mindful of there, is that there is no end goal. And therefore, success has to be really about process and about building. I'd like to feel like I have momentum, like I'm growing, like one opportunity leads to the next. If I'm being really thoughtful about that and I'm seeing returns on that, then that's what success is.
There's a term I've always liked, and I've seen it lots of, which is the journey is the destination, you know, whereas that if you're always looking ahead to that goal and not embracing the now, you're not going to appreciate, you know, and that's not to say not to have goals, but the process, as you said, I think the journey that you're on is you have to find success in that as well.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, I got a few rapid fire questions for you. So let's see how these go. So if a movie was made about you, who would you want to play you?
I don't pay enough attention to pop culture anymore to even know the names of people. I will tell you that as a kid growing up with a big Jewish nose and curly hair, everyone kept calling me Screech, the Justin Diamond character from Saved by the Bell. Dustin Diamond. Dustin has passed away, so he is not playing me. I don't know. Somebody very charming. I have no idea.
Should stories always have happy endings?
No. but they should have satisfying endings.
I like that answer. Do you have a favorite emoji?
I used the laughing crying emoji, and then it was funny to read like 2 years ago, I think it was BuzzFeed or somebody ran a story about how like the kids today have completely abandoned that emoji, and now it's only for old people. And I read that and I thought, well, you know what? That sounds about right. I mean, I'm not trying to be a teenager. Okay, I'm going to keep using it.
I like it. Can you name one of your favorite songs? I mean, in the music. So.
Yeah, I am. The Underdog by Spoon is the song that I used to use to and I guess probably will still use if the need calls. But if I'm trying to pump myself up on the way to something, you know, like I remember the first like couple times I went to a TV studio to be interviewed on camera or whatever, and I would just need to feel like I'm on a mission here and I'm going to succeed, then The Underdog by Spoon is what I always played for myself.
How about a favorite social media platform?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn. I think the engagement there is fantastic. Visibility is excellent. And it's a really nice, smart, supportive community. You know, Twitter is a dumpster fire. TikTok I really enjoy, but I haven't figured out how to kind of consistently put up value that people like. And Instagram is just, you know, the algorithm is all over the place and it's just very hard to find traction and success. But LinkedIn is great.
Can you name a book that left a lasting impression on you?
Yeah, sure can. A Heartbreaking Work, Staggering Genius by Dave Eggers was an amazing memoir. And it really showed me that you can play with writing style and communicate even more. And I read it as a college kid, and it stayed with me.
You've been really kind. Is there anything, you know, I know you just wrote a book recently. Is there anything you want to promote that people can go and find out more, learn about Jason, those kinds of things?
Yeah, I'll say so. Yeah, my book is called Build for Tomorrow. It's available in audio, ebook, or hardcover. You can find it wherever you get books. And it's a book about adaptability, how to thrive in change. If you are going through a big change in your career right now, if you're considering a big change, if you're trying to find the bright side in something that feels scary, this is a book designed for you. It's drawn from the lessons I've learned from the smartest, most adaptable people and entrepreneurs, as well as the history of innovation, which I'm really obsessed with. And so, you know, I'd love if you picked up a copy. It's called Build for Tomorrow.
I'll make sure I put the Amazon link in the book. Jason, this has been great. And I want to thank you for sharing your insights and your background. And most of all, I want to thank you for helping us connect the dots.
Ooh, nice ending there. I appreciate it.
Thank you for taking your time to listen to this podcast. Please subscribe on your preferred podcast platform so you don't miss any future episodes. If you could also do me a favor and please leave a review on iTunes, I would really appreciate that. Remember, story matters and is the best way to connect the dots.